My name is Jonathan Frerichs, and Saturday is one of these weird days at Holden where some people are coming and some people are going, and I happen to be going. This is the end of a two-week series, actually, for me. And some of you have been here for a while, some of you are new, and this is sort of like the final exam. But I want to make it fair for those who are new, just as fair for those who are old. And so I'll give you some clues before we actually have the test. And the test will be open book test, and the book will open will be the good book, about two-thirds of the way through the session. In the series, what I've tried to do is ask the question, how do we get glimpses of God when we go and look among strangers? How do we see God in others, and how do they see God in us? And I've tried to use films from my own work with Lutheran World Relief and films from the past in the work of this Christian aid agency to pose that question, to take these classes to different places and different times in the last 50 years around the world. We've been to places like Peru and Rwanda and Angola and Germany and Palestine. And today is a sort of a wrap-up because it looks back over 50 years and tries to summarize some of the work that's been done and some of the learning that has gone on in what is essentially an effort to see God in others and have them see God in us by our actions. And I think it's worth maybe doing a very quick overview of the world of humanitarian aid in the last 50 years. World War II meant that Europe was the first place, Europe was the first place of concern. In the 1940s, and by the 50s, Europe was starting to look a little better. In the 50s, can you think of a continent that we'd put at the head of the list if we thought of disasters and troubles around the world?
Asia?
Yeah. Why?
Korean War,
Hong Kong, the flight of all the people to Hong Kong after China was formed. Carrying on into the 60s, really, because of things like Bangladesh and India, the wars there in the Indian subcontinent. And then by the 70s, what continent would we look to?
South America.
Yeah, Africa. Biafra was actually 68 at the end of the 60s. So Africa sort of starts to come on stream, but the 80s definitely Africa because of the Ethiopian famine and other troubles that have been going on for a long, long time, really starting back in here and going through, and sadly enough, we could almost still say that Africa is the headliner into the 90s with some of the terrible events that have happened here. And this series has weighed towards the disasters because some of the most dramatic times when we see God, I think, in the strangest places and in strange people are in times when big things are happening. That's what catches our attention. That's what most of us know something about. But I've tried to balance it too by calling attention to the places that don't make the news. And we started out high in a little valley in the Andes with a little farm girl there and her chances of staying on in her high valley. And we ended up a couple days ago in India in the kind of silent struggle that goes on in a country like that, where especially women struggle to be fully human against a great many encumbrances and are breaking through in ways which are really changing their world. So although we're skewed towards the headlines, we try to remember that the work of an agency like Lutheran World Relief, and if you're Presbyterian or Methodist or Catholic or Episcopal, the work of your partner agency to us is essentially day in and day out with the long-term development needs around the world. But this learning curve has taken us through those decades, 50 years. Most of these agencies from the mainline churches were formed at the same time as the formation of the United Nations. And that's an interesting parallel, that our church sort of echoes our society a little bit and our concern for the world. And Lutheran World Relief, in a sense, was something like a Lutheran Marshall Plan
back in the early days, and had delivered the most aid of any church agency to Germany by 1950, at a time when one Lutheran in five was a refugee. And Lutherans in this country sat up and tried to take notice and tried to help. I'd like to put out there a couple more things before we look at today's film, which provides this overview. I'm the son of a missionary, and my dad heard the gospel very strongly. You know, go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. That was his call. That's what he responded to as a young pastor in Nebraska in the 1930s. And he went to the other ends of the earth when he heard that an American missionary in Papua New Guinea had died. And he felt that he was supposed to replace that missionary and go and carry out that call to spread the gospel. I think this story of faith in action rather than faith in words or in preaching has a lot to give and a lot to gain, a lot to get, a lot of dialogue with another verse. It goes out with some of the same missionary spirit, but Luke 10, and actually about verse 27, who remembers their Sunday school lessons, confirmation? What's Luke 10, 27?
Just look it up.
It's the great commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, the summary of all the laws and the prophets. When the lawyer asked Jesus, Jesus asked him, what's written? And he responded. It's actually found back in Leviticus somewhere. This wonderful combination of loving other people the way you love yourself. An almost impossible challenge to us, I think. But also one that we cannot help but understand and cannot help but be shaped by as we try to follow in Christ's footsteps. And it always strikes me that as the son of a missionary, and as having been a missionary myself in media work, it's an interesting thing to try to think of these two things together. Or even to try to say perhaps that maybe this one doesn't need to be forgotten, but maybe it needs to take second place to this one. We commonly call this the Great Commission. Call this the Great Commandment. And part of what I think is important in looking at this kind of work is to think in terms of the Great Commandment, that we as a rich country, we as the proverbial camel that cannot fit through the eye of the needle, in Jesus' words. If there's a country on this planet, which is that nation? I think it's us. We perhaps have more to learn about going out to the rest of the world in the name of Christ if we go with our orders coming from the Great Commandment than if we go coming from the Great Commission. Because it's a question of walking the talk or being credible. And what people see is what we bring to them and the way we act. What your children see in you, you know, they don't remember everything you told them to do, but they sure remember the way you behave as parents. It's almost like that as missionaries and as Christians trying to make a witness in the world. And in a world where the gospel can be heard from local lips because of the universal church planted by the waves of missionaries, people like my father and many others, the gospel is not too far from most people in the world today in a spoken form. And so perhaps if we want to go out with a little less baggage, you can make a case that maybe Luke 10 is a better set of marching orders than Matthew 28. You don't really have to separate the two because some people are gifted to follow Matthew 28. Some people are gifted to follow Luke 10. And those of us who feel we can speak through our actions, faith in action, faith in deed, maybe we find an easier home and an easier mission call in the call to love our neighbors as ourselves. And what's the story that follows right after that? The lawyer says, and who is my neighbor? And what's the story that is answer to that question? The Good Samaritan. You know, the Good Samaritan, the guy from the people that the Jews couldn't stand, who becomes the towering figure in history of the way to speak through your actions. Unambiguous. So this one comment about being the camel through the eye of the needle, but the camel can actually get out there and do some pretty good work. And maybe it makes him a little slimmer or something, and he can get through the eye of the needle a little later on if he just closes his mouth and gets on with it. The other thing I'd like to say is that we Lutherans, like all Christians, are not a united body. And one of the few things that the Lutheran churches of this country, the two major ones, the Missouri Synod and the ELCA and its predecessors, at one point there were 9 lined up. They could all line up behind Lutheran World Relief. A ministry of action, a Luke 10 ministry, can be done without settling all of the theological and stylistic and doctrinal differences that break us up and make us hard to get along with each other, because each one is sort of thinks, well, I really know what's true, and you guys don't quite. But if you just let those differences sit on the side, you don't have to solve them, and say, can we both build this house together? Can we both put a well in? Can we both feed some refugees? Can we do what Matthew 25 asks you to do? When did I see you hungry, thirsty, naked, in prison? You know, can we both glimpse God? Whether or not we agree on all the articles of the Creed or what Luther meant by them? Sure we can. And this is a tiny discussion in a sense, because we're talking about Lutherans. I hope we have some non-Lutherans here, and I hope you realize that in Christ, in the spirit of Luke 10, in the spirit of Matthew 25, there's nothing that separates us. Nothing at all. And you know what? This is really a verge of heresy, I think, for some people maybe, but my experience is, living in the Middle East for 4 years, the best way to get close to a Muslim is to follow Matthew 25, to go looking for Jesus, hungry, thirsty, in prison, naked, and do something about that, and do it with the people you find with you in that country and in that culture. And I don't know what their reference texts are, but they have the same sort of feeling that you have, that this is something you can agree on. And you have a foundation of action that opens up questions of faith and opens up the dialogue between you. Here come the clues for the final exam. If you don't remember anything else, try to remember these 4 things, perhaps, in terms of what it takes to go out there and keep your glasses clean and have a chance of spotting God, you know? Clean set of binoculars or glasses or a clear head. I just put down one word in each case: need, deed, the local face, and as long as it takes. And I just want to highlight a couple things from that. These are basically lessons of Christian service in the world in 50 years, lessons of following the Great Commandment. What have we learned in trying to follow the Great Commandment to love your neighbor as yourself? How do you go about that? Well, I've suggested already this one, that you go out and you make your deeds say who you are. Don't go out and make your words say who you are. You make your deeds, your life, your action, your ministry speak for itself. And where that is most poignant, I think, is in a country like Bangladesh, where it's 99.5% Muslim. And if they're going to hear you, they're going to have to hear you through the way you act, because you may not even be able to preach. But you're there as a Christian with a Christian purpose, with Christian support, with a church that would love you to preach the gospel and share the good news. And you are actually under some stress because you feel like you can't. But you can go in their name and you can work. And this idea of faith in action rather than faith in words or in preaching or in fine sentiments or in great thoughts or in wonderful theology, that, you know, the prize of Lutherans. Great theology, don't we? But you leave it behind and you go out anyway and you trust what you're doing to speak for you. Somebody said once a verse I can't forget. They said, you know, John starts with, in the beginning the Word became flesh. The Word became flesh. And we spend all of our time trying to make it Word again. You know, with all the sermons and all the fine thoughts and all the books and all the studies and all the hymns and all the prayers, we spend a lot of time trying to make the flesh Word again. Well, this is going back to that and say, let's make it flesh again. You know, that's one thing. Okay,
sort of a principle of looking for God. Go out with that on your mind. The second thing, and I suggested a place where Muslims, for example, the Muslims have had suffered a great deal in this half century. At one point, half of the refugees in the world were Muslims, about 5 years ago. The idea that you go out on the basis of need, and you help people on the basis of need, not of creed, or of color, or of race, or of politics. That came home very quickly in Germany. I told a little story about that, how people receiving the help from us right after World War II, good Lutherans who got these good Lutheran aid packages from Lutherans in America, they realized they couldn't just share it among themselves. They had neighbors who were Catholics, who were just as hungry as they were, and just as homeless, and just as desperate. And they had to share what they received with their neighbors. So deed, need, local faith, this is really the idea of a local partner. And I think it's been true everywhere too, but it's also perhaps most poignant in a place like Africa where we're talking about a different color skin in a real different world. And the work in Africa has, I think, made progress partly because it's now, in the case of Lutheran World Relief, done with local partner organizations. And so the face of Lutheran World Relief there is a black face. It's not a white face. It's a local expert. It's a local worker. It's a local Christian, or sometimes non-Christians, who are competent for the task at hand. And they give a sense then that the power to act out Jesus' words is nobody's property and everybody's property. They are able to respond just like you and I would. And there's something, I think, particularly blessed about really putting the task on the table, putting the money on the table, putting the planning on the table, putting the accountability on the table, making a deal, and saying, okay, we'll need a 6-month report. We'll come and visit you in 3 months. We'll reassess the whole thing after 1 year. And that's how we go about our work. Lutheran World Relief has one American overseas. The rest are foreigners who work for us in only about 20 cases. There are that many staff overseas. And the rest are local organizations who aren't even our employees. And then the last one, as long as it takes. And the best example there is Palestine. Palestine is suspended somewhere between a disaster and a recovery. Palestinian people are refugees after 50 and more years. It's a place where Lutheran World Relief and other agencies like it have had to stay and stay and stay because the situation has not resolved itself. When you are sledding uphill against injustice, all the aid in the world isn't going to make any difference. It keeps people alive. I shouldn't say that. It keeps people alive. But it doesn't change the situation. When the powers of the world have got to get their act together and make a deal which will provide some kind of justice, and in that case make a deal where somehow two people will be able to live on the same piece of land and come to terms with each other. So those are the sort of four windows onto this question that I've been raising, and if you keep those four things in mind, I think your chances of spotting God in some of the faces that you see in these films, and this today's film is a sort of a wrap-up, your chances are pretty good, and I'd like to ask you who you saw and what they saw in us, pretending that you have been out there in the name of Christ as American Christians. I'd like to ask you who you saw and what they might have seen in us after you're finished with this. Any questions at this point? I guess the final exam doesn't hold any fear for you. You guys have real cheap seats. There's some expensive ones over there that are free now. Could someone hit the lights?
Almost every day, it seems, I'm covering catastrophes like these from around the world. It makes me often wonder, who is helping these people? What are we as Lutherans able to do? What happens after the headlines? Recently, I talked to my father, who has just finished writing and researching a book that has a lot to say about this. The story is about Lutheran World Relief, and joining me to tell that story is my dad, Dr. John W. Bachman, author, educator, churchman, most recently author of Together in Hope, 50 Years of Lutheran World Relief. Lutheran World Relief faced an enormous task in 1945, faced trying to help sort through enormous devastation. How could one agency handle that kind of a task?
I'm sure that question was asked in 1945 when Lutheran World Relief was organized. The devastation was so extensive throughout much of Europe, where we knew that 60 million Lutherans were living. And so the Lutherans in this country decided that they had to do something. And I could demonstrate this, I believe, from my book, but you, as an anchorman, emphasized the visual, so we're going to use some cuts from films. Let's look at the first one, from a 1947 film, showing what we were attempting to do.
How can we hope to achieve peace and security through future cooperation between nations, when at this moment, hunger and hopelessness are breeding new wars? For these, there is no peace. For their misery of body has brought a decay of the spirit, resulting in hopelessness and despair. Especially in war-torn Europe, in the very cradle and stronghold of the Reformation, is the hand of Christian aid sorely needed. For here, where war has set man back 1,000 years, millions live under conditions far more conducive to unbelief than to faith. It is to us, their brethren in America, that they must look for a sign of the love taught by our Lord Jesus Christ. We alone possess the resources to sustain bodies and restore the faith of those people who feel themselves abandoned by God and man.
Deb, we had relatives, didn't we, in the same predicament?
Yes, indeed. Your mother especially had aunts, uncles, and cousins over there, some of whom came as refugees from the East. Some of them were homeless right there in their own area, very much like thousands of other Lutherans in this country who had close ties. And so shipments were sent abroad. Food, some of it raised by farmers in this country, clothing collected by the women of our parishes, blankets, quilts made by these women, as much as could be collected, gathered and sent abroad for the needy.
So the relief really got through to them.
Yes, in great quantities. In fact, more supplies got to Germany from Lutheran World Relief than from any other private agency by 1950.
Did the relief go only to Lutherans?
No, there was very careful distribution on the basis of need. This made it possible to show congregations how they could relate to their neighbors.
It is most important to understand that the relief supplies of Lutheran World Relief in Germany and elsewhere are always distributed under church supervision. But every agency receiving our supplies is obligated to make distributions strictly on the basis of need, regardless of race, creed, or political affiliation.
For Lutheran World Action, you fed them, nursed them, clothed them, taught them. You became father and mother to the orphans.
We've all heard of the work of the Red Cross and the United Nations. Couldn't this work have been done by them?
We worked with the Red Cross and United Nations agencies in many places. The fact that work could be done in Germany fairly soon after the war was made possible because religious groups, including Lutheran World Relief, petitioned the government to change a policy that was apparently in effect at first, saying that we shouldn't do anything for these countries that had been our enemies.
Dad, today's needs are so widespread. Bosnia-Herzegovina, Rwanda, Somalia, Croatia. Is LWR less qualified to meet those needs?
Surprisingly, Lutheran World Relief is especially well qualified to deal with many of those situations because we have contacts in so many places throughout the world. In our partnership with the Lutheran World Federation, this means that there are 120 churches on all continents to whom we can relate. And in our past activities in relief, we've established relationships with local agencies. It's an early warning system. This happened with an earthquake in India. It had happened in Ethiopia, where Lutheran World Relief knew about the famine there long before it got to your television station, for example.
And you said in your book that Lutheran World Relief can stay and really get the job done long after people like me are covering the story.
Yes, thanks again to these local partners with whom we can work. In places like Palestine, where we've been involved in relief work for nearly all of the 50 years.
And even today, the Holy Land lies under an uneasy truce, with a threat of more violence hanging over old Jerusalem like a cloud. Arabs, bereft of land and home possessions, dwell in tent cities by thousands and thousands. Refugees. Always refugees, 800,000 of them, walking the long road that leads to nowhere. Some of them are Christians, most are not, but love makes no distinctions. This challenge of suffering is ours to answer.
Dad, it's sobering to realize that these people are still refugees 50 years later. The answer in providing help for them must go beyond just feeding the children. It must involve justice and bringing political pressure from around the world to provide that justice.
Yes, true enough. Lutheran World Relief does help to maintain an oasis of healing for those Palestinians. This is primarily through a hospital, Augusta Victoria Hospital on the Mount of Olives. One of our Lutheran World Relief visitors was over there with the man in charge, Ed Mall. They met with a local sheikh, Arab, who commented, "You know, we don't care much for the type of Christianity that comes over here and tries to take our holy places, but we do appreciate the Christianity that you represent." And he said, "I think so much of that that I've arranged for a son of mine to go to one of your schools so that he can learn what Christianity is all about."
Progress is slow in such places. Can you give an example of Lutheran World Relief getting involved and sharing success with the local people?
Yes, I think Korea is one good example of this. Lutheran World Relief was there first of all, as is often the case when the situation was terrible, when there were victims of the war, children who suffered from landmines. They were blasted away, and an attempt was made to help them literally get back on their feet. But then later, it was a question of helping whole communities to get on their feet so that they could become self-supporting.
Dad, you know in your book that Lutheran World Relief by 1960 had helped an estimated 10 million people in 36 countries. That's an impressive number.
Yes, and since then, of course, many millions more have been served in about that many countries each year.
And really, Dad, after Asia, in the 1960s, the focus came on Africa. Africa was making the headlines as really the new refugee story. There were so many problems being faced in Africa, so many factors involved, too. You had colonialist mistakes, you had the struggle with the new governments, you had old tribal rivalries.
True enough. Here are scenes from Angola's 30-year war, which our country and the Soviets prolonged.
Nations of the world rush in to relieve a disaster they were powerless to prevent, and which all too soon they will forget. Much of this relief work was only possible because the church was already there. Will the churches and peoples that have hastened to their aid remain to establish their cause?
In the case of Angola and that boy, it's a question Lutheran World Relief can answer. We were there, and with the Lutheran World Federation, we are there now.
But that depends on support back here at home. And isn't it true that more and more local parishes seem to be giving less to the national and the international church?
Our congregations in both the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and sometimes with help from Wisconsin Synod, continue to raise money for world hunger through the hunger programs in these church bodies, and it has not dropped. Generally, it's the same or a little more. Now, that still isn't a huge sum. The total amount from our member churches isn't really any more than about $2 per person. One of the big advantages, however, is that Lutheran World Relief operates very efficiently, and you'll see from this next film, this is something of a contrast from before, where we were doing the work. Now you're going to see people from the area taking leadership.
That's the kind of positive story we don't often run from Africa.
That's a part of the work of Lutheran World Relief, to help develop new leaders.
But community development has to be set back or perhaps even dropped when a new crisis breaks out, like the massive tragedy in Rwanda.
That's a very sobering case, of course. The numbers of people alone are staggering. The Lutheran World Relief was there from the very first, moving into action, providing transport, water supplies, camp management, and was still heavily involved more than a year later when many agencies had left. Supporting aid and reconciliation efforts on both sides of the political chasm that has torn open the country.
In crises such as these, though, is Lutheran World Relief really able to help and serve both sides?
This is one of the special things that church-related agencies can do that almost nobody else might be able to do. Be related to both sides in a way that gains respect and prepares the way for assistance to everybody when peace comes. One of the results of these conflicts, of course, is often an exodus of large numbers of refugees that have to be settled elsewhere. And one of the cases that has been productive is some Rwandans who went to Tanzania, where Lutheran World Relief has helped them start over from the beginning with food, shelter, just the basics of existence.
And these pictures demonstrate how much manual labor there is, and so many are women involved.
They do share the sweat, but also share much more. Women are now at the center of the health, nutrition, education, economic questions. Lutheran World Relief has worked increasingly with women in recent years. They're the ones who can change families and communities from the inside.
Is that where you got the title, Together in Hope?
Yes. Working together, as in this country, where men and women are working together in different ways from years ago. And we are working together with those people.
And yet these are partners that most of us will never meet, voices most of us will never hear.
Except through Lutheran World Relief.
I'm so proud that women are so economically empowered, that we have our own pork, we have our own fish, we have our own milk from our dairy projects, we have our own vegetables, we have everything.
It seems like a window on a healthier, more self-reliant world than the one we tend to see, or the one I often report on.
The history lesson doesn't end there. It finds the same spirit in the partnerships that exist in thousands of parishes around the country, where some people almost twice as old as Lutheran World Relief and others half as young, who keep filling LWR warehouses year in and year out against the day of need, and in places we haven't yet mentioned, like the Andean region. Lutheran World Relief listens and stands with local people. Here's an example in this very picture where the fairly new executive director of Lutheran World Relief, the first woman to fill that post, Catherine Wolfhard, is meeting with a Peruvian farmer and listening to him.
These pictures really speak volumes about Lutheran World Relief. As I look at it, it really was an agency that started out sending quilts to the war weary 50 years ago. And today, Lutheran World Relief still responds to crises like this, but also they're working quietly with people who grow their own wool and are helping others as well.
Very good, John. Now you can report more than bad news.
I like the way that Dad ended his book on Lutheran World Relief. We know that God loves us and that love is ours to answer. And so for 50 years, as Dad wrote, we have joined our Lord in tasks to be completed in God's good time. Perplexed at times, but not despairing. Ready in faith, ready to answer for 50 more.
You could cross out the words Lutheran World Relief and put Catholic Relief Services or the United Methodist Committee on Relief or any of the agencies really that do the same sorts of things. And I think the story would hold pretty true. Now, you might have to change some of the places where they were active depending on their own church connections. But the story would hold in much the same way, I think, in terms of the parameters and the interest and what is learned by going there. Any comments? It's a lot of ground in 16 minutes, but you see some of the points in history that I was talking about, and you see some of the principles that I talked about as a way to try to live out Luke 10. Comments or questions?
John, how do you qualify the local agencies that you work with? What kind of test do they have to pass before you start working?
It's sort of incremental. I mean, you find yourself having worked somewhere for a while,
okay,
and you get to know people in the field and people who are doing things, and it happens in many different ways. Sometimes in Peru, for example, we have a fantastic regional director down there who is Mr. Development for Peru, and he just knows everybody and can. His judgment alone is almost good enough. But in other places, I met a young man in West Africa about 3 months ago who had been a well digger for Lutheran World Relief when it was more operational than it is today. When we stopped doing it ourselves, he decided he'd set up a well diggers cooperative, which has now gone into literacy and agriculture and a number of other things to support the well digging work as well. And he's one of our partners. He and his group are one of our partners today. It's interesting too, when you walk into a village or a situation, you can tell within about 20 seconds whether or not the organization has got its roots in the community and whether or not women are having any say in what it's doing. Just by the way the seats are arranged, by the way where people sit, what the expression on the faces is, how many people are there because they were told to be there, and how many people are there because they want to be there and have something to say and really have a stake in what's going on. It's a pretty tough thing to fake. We can get snowed, but I don't think we get snowed very often because of the ongoing relationship with each of the partners that we have. Other questions or comments?
Your missionaries are in the area too?
There are sometimes in about half the countries there are Lutheran missionaries. Mm-hmm. We try to stay in touch with them. We try to have them in touch with a local partner where possible, but sometimes not. Sometimes yes. It depends if they're in the same location, what they're doing. And there aren't always as close links as there could be. But it's something we always keep in mind, and we try to make a connection wherever possible. Well, I'd like to ask if we could have a little bit of Bible research, and I'd like to have us, if you could, there's about 16 Bibles here and 16 verses on the board. Would you sort of hold up your hand if you're a good verse finder? Okay, let's see if you're a medium verse finder.
Which part of the New Testament?
Let's say if you got a Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth.
Yes, because you know.
I'll pass it up.
Okay. Yeah, you have to have your glasses. All right. Could we have somebody for Deuteronomy 15? We'll start at this end. Deuteronomy 15, John? No. Okay. All right. Deuteronomy 15. How about ma'am with the quilted hat? Deuteronomy 26, verse 12. Let's just go around the room. Don?
I don't read my glasses.
Oh, okay. Well, Angela can read for you. The next one would be Proverbs 11:24. Moving along, Paul, would you do Proverbs 25:21? Moving along, Isaiah 55:1, you get a beauty. Isaiah 58:10 and 11. Jeremiah 29:5. Ezekiel. That's one of those you can never remember where it is, right?
Yeah.
Ezekiel 18:7 and 16. Matthew, no, sorry. Yes, Matthew 10:42. Matthew 25:38. You get a humdinger. Jim?
Sure.
Luke 10:27. Da, 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 da. John 5:3. Acts 20:35. I think you're the next one of the Bible. Acts 20:35. Hebrews 13:16. And we don't have enough books out there. You first three, when you're done, would you pick up the last three verses, please? Let's go around and just hear them, starting in that order.
If there is among you anyone in need, a member of your community in any of your towns within the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your needy neighbor. You should rather open your hand, willingly lending enough to meet the needs, whatever it may be.
Okay.
When you have finished paying all the tithe of your produce in the third year, which is the year of the tithe, given it to the Levites, the aliens, the orphans, and the widows, so that they may eat their fill in your towns. More?
No, just 12, verse 12. Mm-hmm.
Some give freely, yet grow all the richer. Others withhold what is due and only suffer want.
If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink.
That's Proverbs 25. Isn't that incredible? It's kind of a mixture of love your enemies and Matthew 25, you know, if I'm thirsty. And it's Old Testament. These are all Old Testament.
Isaiah 55:1. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you that have no money, come, buy, and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price.
Last week in the Bible studies, Dan Erlander was starting with that verse. It's wonderful. Isaiah again.
If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom be as the noonday, and the Lord will guide you continually, and safely your desire with good things, and make your bones strong, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water, whose water fails not.
You shall be like a watered garden. Okay, next.
Build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat what they produce.
Good verse for a refugee. Ezekiel 18.
Does not oppress anyone, but restores to the debtor his pledge. Commits no robbery, gives his bread to the hungry, and covers the naked with a garment. Does not wrong anyone, exacts no pledge, commits no robbery, but gives his bread to the hungry and covers the naked with a garment.
Okay, Matthew 10:42.
And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of the disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward.
Matthew 25, yeah.
And when was it? Or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that when we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?
Okay, that series goes on and back and forth, but I get the idea, thank you. And then Luke 10?
He answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself."
Mm-hmm. John 5:3.
In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed.
In these lay many invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. Okay. Acts 20.
In all this I have given you an example that by such work we must support the weak, remembering the words of the Lord Jesus, for he himself said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive."
Mm-hmm. Support the weak. Hebrews 13.
Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God.
Okay, sorry about that. Share what you have, such sacrifices are pleasing to God. 1 John 3:18.
Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in the truth and action.
What were the first few words?
Little children, let us love not in word, speech, but in truth and action.
In truth and action, okay. And then Revelations 7:9.
After this I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, robed in white, with palm branches in their hands.
Okay. And let me add a reading from the book that was in the video, written by the older man whose son was the newscaster. He ends his book with this little quote. He says that LWR was part of a massive program of relief and development when East Pakistan became Bangladesh in the 70s. And at a dinner celebrating the transfer of church-related relief activities back to local leadership, the Minister of Social Affairs in the new government, a Muslim, said, "I find it difficult to understand you people and your work. In the midst of our trauma and suffering, we needed help. Our whole country and its government had to be rebuilt. Then, who came to show their goodwill and provide assistance to our people? Was it the people of the various religions in neighboring countries, the Hindus, the Buddhists, or the people from China or Japan? Or was it our fellow Muslims from South Asia or the Near East? No, it was you Christians, you whose representatives in Bangladesh don't even number 1% of our population. What made you do this? What motivated you to come and help us? Even though your action is hard to understand, we do appreciate it, and we want to express our deepest gratitude to you." It's sort of a modern-day echo of some of these things that we get from the many references. Any of your own reflections or comments, questions?
Question. What's the greatest need for Lutheran World Relief right now?
Today?
Yeah.
I would say bringing the good news home from overseas. I think that we have more to gain, actually, as a church and as a nation than we have to give, almost. And the gaining of that perspective and that faith in God's will around the world and what's happening and what other countries are going through and how well they're doing and how successful some of these things are, that may be more important that we hear that than that we actually reach deeper into our pockets. You know, if we started and said, "Well, we need more money," you know. I'm just struck again and again how often the Word of God comes to life when you go overseas and you kind of keep your mouth a little bit shut and your ears open and your eyes open. And you see what's being done in God's name and what it means to people, you know. If we follow any of the verses we just read, we can be Christ to others. And that's happening. And they're being it to themselves. And those stories can come home to us in a way that really bring the Word of God to life, I think. I mean, I think it breathes a real dimension back into our faith that some of us know very well, but maybe the wider people, you know, the kind of people who don't vacation at Holden, maybe we could stand to hear a little more often, because that second part of the Great Commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, and it's our neighbor near and our neighbor far away, and there's room to do both. We're not putting up the foreign needs against the international needs at all. That's not
That's a false dilemma also, I think.
And this is love that has nothing to do with feet. It's not a feeling. It's an action. It's something
right.
that you do.
Right.
That's what makes it so hard.
Yeah.
You can't just sit back, oh, you
know. Yeah.
It's,
yeah, it's tough. At the risk of repeating myself all week, I mean, I just tried to lift up moments when I felt like, in my limited experience, this good news jumps out at you to be brought home and shared. And I say that's our greatest need, is to get the word out. Because I think that our culture has led us to think small and to think limited and not to have our church necessarily be a place that challenges us to think of the world and to be a fresh window on the world. I try to watch the national news just to see what people are getting told and compare it to what I'm seeing at work and what I'm hearing directly from the field. And it's pretty shocking. It's pretty shocking just what isn't even on there. I resort to the BBC World Service, the radio service from London, to get some international news, you know, and to back up what I don't follow from work. I read the New York Times, which is a decent newspaper, but you know, a lot of people aren't reading the newspaper, and if they're relying on news, what's it about these days? It's about your money and your health. You and your wants and your needs. It's this kind of stuff they can, you know, make money off of by selling ads around it. Our news has gone commercial in a way that makes it impossible for it to tell us what's happening in the world. There's no money to be made off of learning the truth about Rwanda, but there's an awful lot to be learned about God, man, woman, sin, the wages of sin, the chance for redemption, the importance of reconciliation, the difficulty of reconciliation. Child, Michael whispers in my ear. So I think that's the greatest need. I think we have a lot of wonderful partners out there. We have study tours, and everybody who goes on them comes back a new person because they meet the partners. It's tourism sort of with redemption built in, redemption for the soul, realizing that this is not the only country on the planet, and it may have more to learn from the rest of the world than it has to give at this point in history. That's maybe a lot to say, and you don't have to agree with me, but we can have discussion about that if you like. I'm also struck by something that is worth mentioning. Yes, Don.
I think, John, one of the things, everything you said, I completely agree with the philosophy, but I think the other thing we got to remember is there's another country, too, that we have to look closer to home and apply those same standards to.
Yeah.
USA and, mm-hmm. and lots and lots and lots of needs.
Yeah, your neighbor.
And maybe we can, as a local congregation, can do some of that, but they can also do some things within their parish or within their reach yeah. that fit everything you just said.
Exactly, yeah. No. And that's our first mission field. But I think that as the world's most powerful country, as the world's richest country, the church is one of the last bastions of some kind of world responsibility, you know. And it sometimes feels like it's slipping away. You heard John Bachman, you know, it's about $2 per Lutheran per year for world needs. You know, we don't think twice about going to McDonald's with $2 or the ice cream bar. And yet, read the gospel and it's there in great measure. Yeah. Yeah. Holly.
I go to a church that has a shelter. We've been running at least for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you do always as you sit in reflection, you wonder, you always are trying to balance that act of, is your faith message being told? I mean, Lutherans mm-hmm. aren't known for going out right. and speaking their faith story.
Mm-hmm.
We're really doing well with the shelter. You know, we're doing what we can with a small congregation. All that's doing well. But you always come back and say, you know, there's very few that actually come, in our case, upstairs
mm-hmm.
and actually join your, you
right.
know, join your service and
right.
end up involved. And so you're always you know, our Lutheranism gets in the way of that sometimes.
We're not able to invite them?
Yeah, or just talk your faith story in the midst of all that. I mean, you talk so much about that thing that you come representing Christianity, and that is, that's the way it's manifesting itself is the service that you're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wonder how many opportunities come along. We wait for opportunities to talk about our faith. We aren't very forward.
Right.
In our case, I think people are almost worried about stepping on toes. You know, when you work with different cultures of people who are coming from different places, you don't want to do anything to offend people by faith. And I don't know, so...
Maybe we need to be a little less worried about that and a little more forthright. You know, take the leaf out of the Baptist page there.
Well, I was just reading Mother Teresa, and it really hit me. I mean, everything they do is because of their faith, and they make that very clear.
Yeah.
They don't preach their faith to people, but everyone knows that's why they're doing what they're doing. And I'm not so sure that it's always clear.
Yeah. Something like 40% of the parables are about this kind of thing. You know, I mean, there are any number. About half the Sundays, you can get a boost for this kind of ministry, which I think gives you a way to talk about it, to think about it, to share, to reference it. But it's not easy, I agree. Just a final comment I'd like to make, and by way of saying that this this story is not over, and something you saw there in the film is coming back, perhaps, in these very weeks, and that's the case of Korea. North Korea right now is in the middle of some kind of a slow famine. It's an incredible situation where an authoritarian government is almost unable to ask for help, but they need it so bad that they have no choice. And they've just agreed to sit down and do a peace treaty with China, the USA, and South Korea at the same table. It took them 4 months to even agree to sit down. They said, "We'll sit down if you give us food." And the U.S. wouldn't give them food. But now they've sat down without saying we need food. We know they need food. They need 1 million tons of food this year to get them through to the next harvest. Right now there's about 200,000 tons in the pipeline. And churches are able to be in there in a special way. We have a person in Pyongyang, North Korea right now to be a liaison, to see that the food gets to where it's going, and to help the government come to terms with the outside world. But they have said to us, "We are not going to beg in front of your cameras like Africans." They're not going to do what we might feel they need to do to make so that we can see and then believe. They're asking us to believe without seeing. That's an amazing challenge. The statistics are not very heartening. The official ration is 100 grams of rice per person per day. That's about 2 handfuls of cooked rice. And it's been going like this for 3 years, slowly, in a very slow decline. They had hail in 94, bad floods in 95, pretty bad floods in 96. On the back of a creaking system, a system that has been deprived of its Soviet barter and its Chinese barter, and now has to try to deal with the world with hard currency, of which it has none. A system with a big military, a system at war with South Korea, you know, still in a state of war over the DMZ. A crazy system in a sense. But the people are suffering, and can we respond? And in some of the northern provinces, the reports are that the 100 grams a day has broken down completely. It's sort of a triage. The government is not even getting food through to the northern provinces anymore. And when visitors get there, there's been some church visitors, some UN visitors, they're seeing not animals in the field, but people in the field. The animals have been eaten. And the people are out looking for grass and roots. And they estimate that a third of the country, 8 million people, is at risk of serious malnutrition. And a half of those, as many as 4 million people, are on the brink of some kind of famine. But it's a famine that's very slow. And older people are not eating, so young people can eat. And you know, the people who can kindly get by in any way are doing what they can to get by. They're bartering things with China and so on. And a church... guy from Church World Service, you know the agency Church World Service, a longtime partner of Lutheran World Relief. He's been in there a dozen times. And in 1992, I'll just end with this comment, he went to an audience with Kim Il-sung,
You know the 50-year leader, the Mao Zedong of North Korea, very much a cult of personality. And they're sitting around with Kim Il-sung the year before he dies. And what does he say to them? I've always admired the Christians, because they're always, when somebody's in trouble, they're always the first ones in there. Now, I'll leave you with that testimony to the power, I think, of going out and without even perhaps thinking in that terms, in those terms, of not only being able to see God in our fellow human beings, but also by the grace of God being something of a glimpse of Him to those who are in need. Thank you very much.